Monster Man, episode 269, Wolf in Sheep's Clothing and Wolfwear.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the W chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new patrons. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's patrons, you pledge at the $2 level or higher, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the Deities and Demigod supplement and how to use religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. At the $5 level, you'll also get the opportunity to choose a topic for a special double-length Monster Man episode. So thank you very much to Jim Clare and Richard Hussey. It means a lot to me that you're enjoying the show enough to want to support it, so thank you very much. Alright, our first monster for today is the Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, and this is either a monster that is somewhat let down by its illustration, or a monster that is elevated by its illustration, and which one you choose sort of depends on what you want out of this monster. At heart, the Wolf in Sheep's Clothing is, and I hate saying this because I just said it last time, it's yet another trap plant monster. And it's very similar to some of the other ones that we've seen already. So it has like a bitey mouth that looks like just a sort of, you know, a wrinkle or fissure in the trunk of the tree. It like lifts up its root tentacles and grabs people with them and drags them toward its mouth. It has some eye stalks that it can lift up that give it a good view of its surroundings. And it lures prey toward it by creating a little fuzzy bud on top, which it can make look a bit like an animal. So the illustration shows a bunny. And I think that what we're meant to imagine is, rather than just having a bit on the top that looks like a bunny, that it's capable of, you know, putting forth a little fuzzy flower kind of thing, sort of like a pussy willow, and, you know, it can move that around such that it might fool a predator into thinking that it is a bunny rabbit. A bit like, you know, those various animals that appear to be another form of animal, either to, you know, attract prey or to frighten away predators. So something that eats bunnies might see the bunny rabbit and go, aha, my prey, and go over there. How this is relevant to adventurers, I do not know. Because once again, we have the problem with the Willow, Black, that there is no particularly good reason to go within 12 feet of this thing, which is the grab range of its tendrils. You either have to just kind of decide, okay, adventurers, you have blundered into the trap, or you have to point out each particular tree on the map and say, which tree are you sitting down next to? Or I guess you could abstract it by having, you know, the ranger make some kind of roll. I don't know, but either way, it's not very satisfying. But the alternative is to expect the players to behave in kind of an unusual way, which is, like, you're describing the environment that they're passing through, and you happen to mention that there is a stump with a bunny on top of it, and have one of the characters go, all right, go over and pet it. Now, I mentioned this theory to my wife earlier this morning, and she suggested that her character might very well decide to go over and pet the bunny. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But my read is that this is yet another one of those monsters that's quite hard to, I mean, effectively have to shoehorn in to the game that you're running, and who's got the time? So I don't know how that's supposed to work. But the problem is that without the bunny aspect, this is just another hangman tree. I mean, the mechanics are slightly different from the hangman tree, but it's just another trap plant monster, of which, as I pointed out, you know, this now makes 11. From the Forester's Bane to the Campfolt, I mean, okay, maybe the Campfolt's sort of like a monster that looks a bit like a tree, but that's really splitting hairs. Just the other day, I finished reading, I have a weakness for Ian Fleming's James Bond novels, which are, I mean, they're bad on almost every conceivable level. They're not necessarily well written, they're pretty racist, their, you know, attitudes toward women are not what you'd call terrific, but they have this sense of dumb fun and creativity that is kind of hard to not be charmed by, and they're a fascinating look at the popular culture of the era, because they almost function like they're a bit like travel guides. You know, half of the novel is always just James Bond taking a vacation. This is an era when international travel was not very commonplace, so you can sort of learn some fun facts about Japan. And I say Japan because in this case, I was reading You Only Live Twice. Now, in You Only Live Twice, the baddie, that's Blofeld, but he's masquerading under the much more innocuous name of Dr. Guntram Shatterhand, and wandering around his Japanese castle in a suit of samurai armor, because of course he is, has built a garden for his castle. It's a bit like the poison gardens at Anik, where he has got all the deadly plants and animals of the world, and he's kind of put them in this special garden. And there's more to it, but basically James Bond has to kind of get through this deadly garden on his mission to assassinate Blofeld, right? So I guess you could have a baddie who, you know, maybe because he's undead or something, so he's immune to all these poisons, he's decided to have a poison garden. Like, if you were exploring the grounds of Castle Ravenloft, I have no idea if there's a poison garden in the grounds of Castle Ravenloft, but it sort of makes sense. That's the kind of thing that a vampire would have, right? Is an evil garden full of bad trees. Sure, why not? That's kind of a one-off environment, though. The second or third time you get attacked by the sinewy mugger, or for that matter, the wolf in sheep's clothing, it doesn't have the staying power of the bugbear, you know? So the wolf in sheep's clothing is a bit like the willow, black, and there's nothing wrong with it apart from maybe the slight ridiculousness of the bunny concept. Dungeon Master, you see a stump with a bunny on top of it. Barbarian, I go pet it. Other than that, it's fine, except that it's basically the same as a bunch of other plant trap monsters. And they don't have kind of... You get the same thing with low HD humanoids, but those are distinguished from each other by their sort of cultures and personalities, or at least they're supposed to be. You don't get that opportunity with plants. Next up, we have the wolfware, which I want to point out is not a werewolf, okay? A werewolf is a person that turns into a wolf. A wolfware is a wolf-like spirit or creature that can turn into a person. It also turns into the humanoid-bodied, wolf-headed form of the werewolf that became so much more popular throughout the 1980s and 1990s, and which, again, I checked this with Allison this morning, and we are pretty sure that that originates in The Howling. So it's not like the hairy-faced wolfman, it's the wolf-headed wolfman that became so popular thanks to Werewolf the Apocalypse. Anyway, the wolfware runs around with a pack of wolves or wargs, and if it sees some challenging prey, it goes back to its lair, changes into its human garb, picks up a stringed instrument. It can't play a wind instrument because it needs to sing. So it goes to them and it begins to, like, play its lute and sing a song that makes them all feel sluggish and drowsy, which basically means they become slowed. So it infiltrates your camp in the guise of a minstrel. Now, again, I sort of like the world that this is positing. You know, a world where D&D parties are wandering around the landscape and they see a bunny rabbit and they want to go give it a snuggle. And if the fact that the bunny's not running away from you should be a sign. Or a wandering minstrel comes up to their camp, and they're like, ah, yes, nothing better than a song after a hard day's march. Let him in. Here, have a few coppers, minstrel. Instead of going, that one's a monster, which is what I think most experienced parties would do, and which does rather spoil the fun. So, congratulations to, you know, Gary Gygax's party, who apparently, after a solid decade of this play, are still totally chill with just letting puffy-sleeved, loot-wielding, high-charisma weirdos into their camp at night. You know, that's buying into the fiction, and I approve of it. Anyway, it only goes on to say that the wolfware is not vulnerable to silver like a werewolf, although it is repelled by wolfsbane. It is vulnerable to cold iron, which sort of suggests it's a fey creature, which goes hand-in-hand with the, you know, shape-shifting and magical singing. So, okay, fine, I'm willing to accept that. And also, that werewolves hate wolfwares, presumably for biting their style. Anyway, the wolfware is okay. It's a bit more of a kind of sneaky murderer character, like it uses deception and trickery to get the drop on you. There's no sense that it's cursed. And like the jackalware, it is something that takes on human form rather than a human. And so I quite like it. It does have a sort of slightly silly element in terms of its minstrel presentation. Like it says, it appears as a pilgrim, minstrel, or tinker. And I think I would be very hard-pressed to introduce a pilgrim, minstrel, or tinker into my party's camp without them going, oh yeah, this guy is a murderer. But perhaps they've just grown jaded and cynical, and they should embrace the spirit that allows weirdos with no obvious credentials into their camp. I think you have to, you know, if you're going to do that, you have to once or twice have it not be an ambush. I think that's only playing fair. People will admit weirdos into their camp if this is a world where weirdos wander the roads after dark, you know, just hoping for handouts. And, you know, maybe they know a tale or two that could be useful to the PCs in exchange for a few coins and a bowl of stew. And I think if that happens a couple of times, then you can sneak in the occasional murderer. But if it's a murderer every time, then the PCs aren't going to put up with it. You know, they're going to start shooting minstrels. Maybe I just think that way because I view this game through the lens of monsters, right? Maybe I should just kind of adjust my expectations and assume that the wolfware occurs within a broader context of peaceful NPC interactions and isn't merely there to teach the players to be paranoid xenophobes. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be finishing up the W chapter of Monster Manual 2 as we look at worms. So please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.